Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Cryptoconomy Podcast. I think I'm going to do one today. We're hitting another quick read, and it's going to be from FEE, the Foundation for Economic Education. So it'll be a little bit on economics. We're going to talk about prices. This is one I've had for a couple of weeks now that I thought was really good summary of some of Mises and Hayek's work. And so it's a really good one to hit, particularly when I think there is a ton of ignorance about money, but also just about prices in general out there of people who've never really learned anything or done any digging as to what a price is. They just kind of get angry when it's inconvenient. And it's always anger at some business owner or whatever, as if they just arbitrarily set these prices. And nothing could be quite as far from the truth as that. With that, there are a couple of news items. If you have not heard, just to check out in the last couple of days, Fidelity has been working in the background. Fidelity Investments has been working for a number of years now. I think it's been at least 4 or 5 years. I've heard that they were dipping their toes in the crypto water. And supposedly they've been mining Bitcoin and or cryptocurrency since like 2015 sometime. So they have just released their Fidelity Digital Assets, and it's a full custodial institutional solution for the digital asset class. And I don't think they are fully functional yet. I'm not 100% sure the degree of what's available and what's not. I read a couple of different articles about it. I believe the one on CCN said that they're still waiting for, or maybe actually I think it was the one on Bitcoin Magazine, said towards the end that they're actually waiting on CFTC approval for some of their, some of the service associated with it. But this is a big player coming in. I mean, Fidelity is huge. The many trillions of dollars in assets, somewhere between like 3 and 7. Everybody's saying like different numbers, so I don't know which one to believe. Literally trillions of dollars in assets are managed by this company, and this is a solution that's basically is competing with Bakkt that will be released sometime in November, or at least last I heard that was the rough release date for that. And now Fidelity is here with their digital asset solution. And so the institutional space and the ability for liquidity and the legacy market to get exposed to this, particularly through institutions that they already have trusted relationships with, is really, really, really big. I think these developments with the market cannot be understated, because it's not a technological. These are not technological innovations at all. These are just legacy rail systems that are involved in the actual custody. And Fidelity has apparently been doing this for a long time, so they seem to have some experience. And their digital assets team is now over 100 employees, somewhere around there, according to a couple of these different articles. So a lot of cool stuff happening there, and I just wanted to give a short update with that. And then we will jump into our article from the Foundation for Economic Education. That's FEE.org. And the article is by Jacob Dowell, and it's titled "How Prices Keep Us from Squandering Resources." One of the most fundamental aspects of an economy is its allocation of resources, simply meaning how and where resources such as steel, rubber, or even human labor are used. The mechanism by which this happens has tremendous effects on the wealth and standard of living of economies. In a capitalist economy, resources are allocated within the structure of the price system. While this concept is often taken for granted by average citizens and even by many economists, it is of utmost importance to the understanding of the economy. Friedrich Hayek's article, The Use of Knowledge in Society, and Ludwig von Mises' treatise, Human Action, pages 324 to 396, both give an extensive examination of the importance of prices. They argue that economic efficiency, or the use of resources, in the most valued and desired way for society, only happens through the price system. Prices are a form of communication. Without a price system, for example, in a socialist government-controlled economy, the complex issues regarding production would be impossible to resolve. What materials should be used to make a product? How much of each material should be used? How much of a product should be produced? Where should these products be manufactured, and where should they be distributed for consumption? All of these questions, without a price system, would be arbitrarily answered. With the price system, however, prices reflect the practical conditions that people live in and coordinates activity. Relatively higher prices tell people that the product is scarce and should be used in the most effective and most highly valued way possible. People do not need to know what caused the price to rise, they just see the higher price and tend to consume it in a responsible and conservative manner. From the point of view of the producers, they examine the options available and use the cheapest method that will get the best production. Relatively lower prices, on the other hand, signal a decrease in the need for as much conservation, either by others not demanding it as much or there being an increase in supply, thereby freeing up the resource to be used for the next most valuable use. This allows consumers to enjoy more of the products they want, thereby increasing the standard of living, and it grants producers easier access to more materials for the development of a larger quantity or a better quality of products, or the experimentation of new products. The effectiveness of the information portrayed by prices can be illustrated in an example. Whenever a producer is building a house, he will observe the low cost of straw, the moderate cost of bricks, and the extremely high cost of platinum. Obviously, platinum is more scarce and should be employed in only the most valuable uses. While straw is the cheapest, it will likely not make a good profit because consumers will not demand such a house. And so brick is used because it is within the bounds of budget and will yield the best profit by best serving the consumers. This simple example of deciding on the materials to build a house may seem obvious given the choices. However, in reality, there are more complicated circumstances that are not so obvious, such as the decision to use wood, steel, or concrete. In addition, this example only looks at one aspect of the decisions that need to be made and ignores how big the house should be, where it should be built, and the quantities of the various resources and labor. Hayek also emphasized that this system of prices is not an organized institution or structure that was created by any single person's design. It was simply a natural consequence of trade between people even before money in a barter economy. Later, the use of money, which Austrians also argue arises naturally without a government, only simplified the transactions and prices by the establishment of a medium of exchange. The entrepreneur and profits. Entrepreneurial profits also play a role in the allocation of resources. Entrepreneurs are the owners of the means of production, yet they do not just arbitrarily decide what they're going to produce. They decide that based on prospective profits that they discover through economic calculation. This is where prices are particularly important in the allocation of resources. In the selfish desires of entrepreneurs to gain profits, they compete in forecasting the future demand of consumers. If an individual believes that consumers are starting to increase their demand for bracelets, which will cause the price of bracelets to rise if there is no supply increase, he may start a project to supply that demand. This is, in effect, the entrepreneur having a foresight into future price discrepancies and acting to make profit off of it. If an individual is making a profit, that signifies that he correctly anticipated what others in society wanted and supplied it for them. Similarly, prices are necessary for the entrepreneur to determine whether he is correctly providing for society or not. In doing business, entrepreneurs consider all the input costs whenever deciding on how to produce something. The entrepreneur, in his desire for more profit, constantly seeks to lower his input costs while improving his product. If he is still not making any profit or is consistently taking a loss, that signifies that he was wrong in his determination of future demand and that consumers have other preferences instead. This shows that the factors of production that the entrepreneur is using could be better spent in a line of production that is more desired by consumers. It could also mean that the entrepreneur is not efficient enough in his production, in which case it still stands that he's using resources beyond what is necessary, and the production of his product will then be supplied by another more efficient firm that takes his place and makes a profit. However, none of this could be known without considering the prices of inputs and the outcome of profit or loss, or what Mises called economic calculation. Profits are not an unnecessary or evil aspect of the economy, as many Marxians or others on the left would suggest. It is a coordinating function that signals to entrepreneurs what society wants and allows him to supply it. Without prices, there would be no way to determine the best arrangement of resources out of the infinite variety of possible arrangements. Loss of investments tell producers to stop producing, and high profits tell them to produce more until the supply is then raised to sufficiently meet demand. Government manipulation of prices. Whenever natural prices are artificially changed, these prices no longer act as the signal of proper information. This distortion of the price system alters the allocation of resources and leads to scarce resources being used in irresponsible ways. These artificial prices arise out of government policies such as price floors, ceilings, subsidies, discriminatory taxes such as deductions and sin tax, and monetary interventions such as inflation. Besides the common understanding that these manipulations can create shortages or surpluses, artificial prices cause an inherent disruption in the allocation of resources. Artificial prices reduce the efficiency of society by allowing first buyers to use the product in a less valued way. While production is still ongoing and the economy is continuing to progress, the potential wealth of the economy is no longer being realized because the more urgent needs of consumers are not conveyed through natural prices. The natural price system and its efficiency in allocating resources are important to learn in order to understand the free market and what it offers. Government intervention into the market, on the other hand, causes inefficiency and waste and diminishes the potential wealth of society. All right, and that was from the Foundation for Economic Education on fee.org by Jacob Dowell. So I thought that was a really good little summary or introduction into the idea that, just the underlying concept of prices, of price theory. Why do prices exist in the economy? And what's funny is that we went through that entire little section about entrepreneurial decisions and economic calculation, but what's important to realize is that there is no price that is not affected by higher order products and lower order products, that it's the entire spectrum. It's a cyclical thing. The the effects of its employees and their consumption and the supply of the entire products across the board, like something that's used in even only a certain degree of like let's say we change the price of straw that's used in farming, and that lowers the cost of raising cattle, which lowers the cost of milk, which lowers the cost of people's breakfast, which lowers the cost of labor, which lowers the cost of the next product that all products that are created from human labor. Like, everything is so unbelievably interconnected in literally an infinite number of ways that you can't separate one price from any other price. So when you start talking about government manipulation, not only does a subsidy in just one thing like corn literally spread out to affect everything in some form, but something as fundamental as the interest rate of the underlying economy is so unbelievably manipulative and imbalancing of the economy that you cannot separate anything that happens in the economy from consequences of manipulating the interest rate. It's one of the key reasons why our economy is so grossly out of balance, is that the literal price of the future is being manipulated. And that's what an interest rate is. It's the price of money. It's price of capital that we are going to produce in 3 years and using it today. And there's so many different ways. Any kind of economic calculation is not based on one entrepreneur's means of calculating what the price of their product and the various factors of production that go into it. It's the price and the culmination of every entrepreneur that involved in every single decision of every single piece that this one entrepreneur is using. So it involves the price of their lunch, it involves their groceries, it involves how much it costs for them to get to and from their place of business. It involves every single product that they buy to get it done, the gears, the machines, the human labor, the insurance, the anything and everything that goes into it is then made and priced by economic calculation from the entire spread of things that go into that business and that entrepreneurial decision making. So the breadth of information that prices accumulate, that they aggregate for the people using them, is infinitely more information than any person could ever obtain in their entire life. And this is just on an ongoing basis, because it works specifically because it is impossible for any one person to know all of the information and assess it. It changes faster than anyone could ever know what's happening. It's kind of like saying that, oh, somebody is going to watch all of the stuff on YouTube, when in reality, something like, I think it was, the last I checked, is like 60 hours are uploaded every minute. It is literally impossible to watch everything on YouTube, and it is, you only get to watch 1/3,600th of what is posted every minute. Prices work similarly. There is so much information being accumulated in a market price from so many different trades and economic calculations of so many different people, consumers, businesses, producers, the entire breadth of what is going on in the economy. There's so much information bottled into that one number that it is laughably impossible for any committee or economist to have a clue what the fuck a price is without the actual economy to tell it. It is literally like saying someone could just create all the content of YouTube and no one understand it all just because they are just that smart. It's such an impossibility as to just be flatly ridiculous. And so I think just that aspect of it is so deeply misunderstood, that the very nature of the price system is in aggregating decisions and valuations from tens of thousands of people to culminate in essentially some sort of valued average of all the work and resources used to make it, used to get that idea or that product to where it is and who is using it. And it's not perfect, clearly, because people are not perfect. So it's an aggregate of people. So the very idea that some people are arrogant, that a huge number of people are not even going to know how to use the product or understand it. I mean, look at Bitcoin as a great example. People don't even, there are a huge ocean of people who think it's absolutely retarded and that it's just magic internet money, but enough people know the difference and, understand it on a different level because information is varied and travels very slowly. You get these huge peaks and troughs, particularly in something that an economy is so ignorant of. So you would expect volatility for the exact reason that when you ask an average person what Bitcoin is or what money is, they can't give you any kind of sensible answer. That is the nature of price volatility right there. If the market doesn't know and the market is still trying to figure it out, you get price volatility because that's the market trying to figure it out. But I just see so much ignorance about prices and manipulation and not knowing what the difference between somebody just buying a large amount or selling a large amount and real manipulation actually is. The number of claims of just the price falls 2% is like, manipulation! Somebody sold a lot. And it's like, well, yeah, that's what happens when you sell a lot. You fill a lot of orders. That such a thing as manipulation is just kind of ridiculous. And it goes against the very fact that price discovery is a process, not a thing that you just stamp and we're done. It's ever changing. In 10 minutes, the price may not be what it was 10 minutes ago because the world is not what it was 10 minutes ago. Things change, and there's no undoing that reality. So there's no one price for anything. An equilibrium price is a process that takes time, particularly with an asset like Bitcoin that is so new, where knowledge gaps are so vast, technological understanding has such huge gaps. I mean, it's just the breadth of differences and complications and valuation and understanding are huge, and those are critical pieces to the pricing puzzle. I guess I won't go into any more. I just kind of wanted to hit that basic idea, and I thought this was a really good introduction. Mises's Human Action, which was mentioned in this article by Jacob Dow, is a great thing to read, but holy crap, it is long. If you are into that, I definitely encourage you to do it. I listened to the audiobook. I may not have listened to the whole thing. I may have grabbed sections of it. I'm not sure if I listened to it all the way through. But the audiobook, I think, is like 60 hours. It's a monster, but there's so much stuff in it. It's dense and unbelievably thorough. Hayek is a much easier person, a much easier author to read. So I definitely encourage that if you're trying to dip a little bit shallower into those seas, but are still really interested by this concept. And what's another good one on prices? Let's see. Rothbard. It's always a good one to read, but another one that's hard to digest for a lot of people. Rothbard's Man, Economy, and State is another giant one, but a brilliant, brilliant work. God, what's one that's a little bit? Bob Murphy. Bob Murphy redid basically Bob Murphy's book Choice, or Robert P. Murphy. His book Choice is basically a updated, much easier to understand today's language version of Mises' Human Action. So that might actually be a really good one to dig into. I've listened to sections from that one as well. Don't think I've listened to the whole thing, but I know that one's Bob Murphy's very easy to understand. He does a great job of explaining things. So if you want to dig into that one, that might be the best one to actually recommend for people who are looking to get into it and not trying to listen to something that's dry and some 50, 60 odd hours long. So I will recommend that one, and I'll provide a link to it to maybe Audible or something. I don't know. I'll find a good link to some reading on this and add those in the into the show notes. And obviously check out fee.org, FEE.org, the Foundation for Economic Education. They have great stuff, publish articles all the time, and they have some pretty lengthy just collected readings on all kinds of stuff for you to dig through. Them and the Mises Institute at Mises.org, M-I-S-E-S.org, are both great resources for everything on economics, prices, sound money, just the whole scope of Austrian economic theory can be found in both of those places, and they're great resources to continue to dig into and stay on top of, because they release stuff constantly. So I will post links to both of them. A big thank you to Jacob Dowell and fee.org for this article. Don't forget to follow them. I'll tag them both on Twitter. I'll see if I can find Jacob Dowell's actual Twitter account. And don't forget to follow me. I am at The Crypto Economy on Twitter, Mastodon, and Medium as well. You can find me on all three of those places. You can find my Mastodon link right in my Twitter profile page. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Don't forget to do that so you can stay up to date on all of this stuff. I apologize for missing episode yesterday. I just got busy and sidetracked, and Mondays usually aren't huge listening days anyway, so I figured I would just go ahead and get some other stuff done that I've been meaning to and come back into our regularly scheduled episodes. But with that, if you would like to support the show, please, it's a huge, huge help. As I always say, it keeps me caffeinated, keeps my coffee mug full, and anything that you can contribute just by sharing, donating Bitcoin to the podcast. I always have a donation address available. Or if you're buying your Trezor, if you haven't done that yet, please do so through my affiliate link. It sends a couple of bucks to me, and it doesn't cost you anything. All of those are great ways to support the show. So thank you so much to everyone who has. Let's see. I think we are good. I will catch you all tomorrow with another episode. I think I might do a guy's take tomorrow about the Lightning app that I want to see. And that may or may not be tomorrow. I've got some notes that I wanted to talk about for that. And we're going to be talking about the CVE bug, the huge bug that happened a couple weeks back in Bitcoin, finally. I don't think I'm going to be able to read Jimmy Song's article in full, but I'll grab some snippets for it, and we might just do a deep dive like some of our previous episodes. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to follow, subscribe, tweet, like, share, retweet, all that good shit. And I will catch you all tomorrow on another episode of the Crypto Economy Podcast. Take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.